I don't think they're going to screw this up.
All right, it is that time again. The Ira Kaufman podcast is on, featuring the king of Newport, Richie, the baron of Big Storm Beer, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He is Uncle Ira, Cosmo's dad, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz, of Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeKemper is here. And Sage, this is an exciting draft podcast. We are 1 week away. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. I survived my walk into Publix the other morning. Had the alarm clock, 6:30. Got to go in the old man hours. And I walk in and go directly to aisle 7. Not a paper towel to be found. Not a napkin to be found. They got the wrong brand of toilet paper. I'm not doing it. I'd rather go without, gentlemen, than get the wrong ply toilet paper. You know, I'm a purist, gentlemen, and my tush needs certain care, and I'm not going to stoop to any kind of level and just take anything they give me. So take that, Publix. I walked out $120 later without any toilet paper in that cart. What do you think of that, DeKemper?
How'd you spend $120 in Publix without buying toilet paper?
Well, I loaded up on fruits and vegetables, and if you believe that, I got a bridge I want to sell you.
Well, Ira, after that rant, I guarantee I will never shake hands with you again.
And Ira, since you went to the old man hours, was it 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock? I don't know. But
that's right. That's right.
In your rush to the produce tables, did you get a wrap on the shins by a cane? You know, you butted in line with some guy and...
Well, I knocked two old ladies over like George Costanza when that fire broke out on Seinfeld. I sent them flying. Look, I got to get my avocado. I got to get my pears and my cucumbers and my mushrooms, gentlemen. But that's just the way it is. And to top the whole thing off, and this is a recurring problem, guys. It's recurring. Every time I get hooked on some kind of brand with a certain kind of food, they discontinue it. What kind of taste do I have, gentlemen? And the latest example, maple syrup. Maple syrup. I like a certain kind. I think it's called Maple Leaf Groves or something. I walk in yesterday. Not only don't they have any on the shelf, but those little stickers, they got something else listed over there. And the old sticker's gone. That means they're never going to have it again. I don't understand this, but every time I like something, they take it away from me.
Kind of like good football at Raymond James Stadium. All right, Ira. Now,
very quick, Steve. Very quick.
Your podcast, of course, is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Later in the podcast, we will be diving very deep into the draft again with General Manager Sean Sullivan of Bill Curry Ford. Now, right now at Bill Curry Ford, they've got a long line, a long list of 0% offers. This is the best time, maybe ever, to purchase a vehicle. They are deferring payments. Ford is making the first payments, so you can get into a vehicle now and not have a payment for several months. All the great Fords, go to BillCurryFord.com. The dealership will bring a vehicle out to you. If you don't want to go there, you want to sort of keep your distance to test drive, they're all set up to do that. But the beautiful giant showroom is set up for social distancing. Phenomenal time to purchase a used vehicle with a lot of inventory, and maybe people have been reading about that in the news, but BillCurryFord.com. Ask for General Manager Sean Sullivan personally. And Ira, of course, we love our friends, the official beer of the podcast, Big Storm Beer. Today is the day to stock up for next week, the draft, all the great Big Storm beers, the Wavemaker, the Tropic Pressure, the Bramosa. They're all at BigStormBrewery.com. You can get them delivered from the Odessa Tap Room, from the Clearwater Tap Room. Easy trip over there to pick up food. You can get food delivered for your draft party. And you can do it all online, BigStormBrewery.com. What do you think, Ira? How much beer are you going to have at home? It's your first draft at home in a long time.
Well, Lee, I can vouch personally for Tropic Pressure. And I'm not a big beer drinker. But that four-pack went very quickly. I would say it was gone within 2 days. And, Lee, speaking of Sean Sullivan, GM of Bill Curry Ford, just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, he wrote a column for Joe Bucks fan within the last few days. And I think it offers proof, Lee, of what we've been telling our listeners now for a long time, and that's very few guys can break down the draft with the insight of Sean Sullivan, Lee. And he just proved it again, and he's going to be on the podcast. So The guy is a man of multi-talents, Lee.
And speaking of our advertisers, Big Storm Brewing has added something that all people of the Tampa Bay area can use. Not just beer drinkers, not just people with good taste and good food. They have put out hand sanitizer. You could buy it at their Clearwater tap room.
Nice.
There's a whole application process on the website, bigstormbrewery.com. Their goal is to sell it to businesses who really need it. I know it comes in like a gallon jug, but you can check it all out there. And a lot of nonprofits and a lot of businesses serving children are going to want that. And it's in short supply, but they've been producing it themselves. It's been national news. Check it out at bigstormbrewery.com. All right, Sage. Now, look, a lot's been going on. And Lee, why don't you ask Ira about this O.J. Howard, the rumors that he's back on the trade block. Lee, what do you think? Ira, what do you think?
Something's going on. There's some smoke to the fire. I just thought it was interesting, and I'll lead up to Ira. I'll lead you into this. Last week, O.J. Howard made two appearances, one nationally, one locally, where he said, number one, he hasn't spoken with Tom Brady yet. Number two, when they asked when he was going to get together with Tom Brady, and, you know, he sounded excited about playing with Brady. When he was asked when he was going to get together with Brady, he says, oh, next couple of months or so. Like, you know, whenever I get back to Tampa, whatever. Like you know, no hurry, no rush. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Weird, but interesting. Then you read Albert Breer, and he's got superb contacts throughout the NFL. He's hearing from his NFL front office sources that the Bucs are trying to trade up into the first round. Well, not into, but higher in the first round, preferably the top 10, to land one of these big four tackles. So that tells me they think they're going to be gone in the top 10 if they don't trade up. That's number two. Then number three, Mike Lombardi said that over the weekend he was bragging about, hey, man, O.J. Howard, if you got to bet on O.J. Howard, you bet the over. This guy's going to go crazy with Tom Brady. And the next day he gets a call from, quote-unquote, an NFL source, which is very popular this time of year, by the way. And he said he was told Bucs are shopping him. They're trying to get rid of him. So, given this information, what's been going on the past week, week and a half, 2 weeks, what is your take on all this, Ira?
There's a problem with O.J. Howard, gentlemen. There's a problem. Now, over the years, when there's rumors and speculation at this time of the season, you look back and you say, 90% of that stuff was smokescreen. It was put out by agents. It was put out by general managers to try to influence the draft. This one, I think, has teeth, and I'll tell you why. I'm the guy that said months ago, Howard may not be a football player. I mean, he's a package and a half, but he may not have instincts as a football player, and I've heard that from a couple of football people, executives, who are wondering why he's not been more productive. If they've turned on O.J. Howard, Steve, I'll say this. It can only be coming from one group, and that's Bruce Arians and his coaching staff. It's not the Glazers, and it's certainly not Jason Light. And it's not Tom Brady, who's never seen, doesn't know anything about Howard's practice habits. All he sees is Howard on film, and quite frankly, there's not enough film on Howard catching footballs for Brady to make that kind of a decision, and I don't think Brady would weigh in, you know, right away about O.J. Howard. So, Steve, what I'm saying is it's got to be from the coaching staff. It's a little surprising Arians could turn on him after one season, but he did catch only one touchdown. And I'm the guy that's been saying Cameron Brate's going to be the beneficiary, not O.J. Howard, of Tom Brady's presence. Steve, most of these rumors at this time of year, they're bogus. But this rumor, as far as it goes, there's a problem with O.J. Howard. I think that's legit.
Yeah, it doesn't pass the whole smell test, especially when you factor in last year's rumors of wanting a trade and O.J. just sort of getting iced out at the end of the year. I mean, we saw it. Zero targets in the final game against Atlanta. Zero targets. He played 75% of the snaps in that game. And Bruce Arians' comment after the game was, well, it might have been O.J.'s best game blocking. I mean, what's going on here? And you know what? He didn't have a 100-yard game last year. He didn't have an 80-yard game last year. He caught one touchdown. They're obviously just down on him, and we don't know exactly why, but it's understandable that he would be on the trade market. Now, I don't know how much you would actually get for him. That's what intrigues me. You know, trades are made all the time. The Bucks got rid of Gaines Adams for a second-round pick, probably the greatest steal in Bucks history overall, if you look at it in some ways. But I don't know how much they really get for O.J. Howard at this point, mostly because I don't think any team would believe that Arians really is serious about keeping him. You know, you need some sort of leverage. I don't know. Maybe he could fetch a third-round pick, which, of course, the Bucks can use to do a lot of things.
He doesn't have the body of work that would command anything higher than a third-round pick. They might be using him as a lever to try to move up. I understand that. You know, move up four or five spots and get the tackle that they want, that they think will be gone at 14, Lee. But, Lee, if you draft a guy 19th overall in 2017 and 3 years later you're taking a third-round pick for him, well, as far as the franchise itself, that's a bust, Lee.
Yeah.
That guy's a bust. And I'll tell you, the one guy that I don't think is initiating these trade talks on his own is Jason Light. I mean, Lee, who wants to admit another first-round mistake? So,
well, he's got job security right now. As long as Arians is here, he's here. If they go to the playoffs, he probably gets an extension, honest to goodness.
And, Lee, I will remind Steve, and now we can tell the story, Steve. I think enough times have gone by that, you know, the one guy that we know was in love with O.J. Howard, absolutely infatuated with O.J. Howard prior to that draft, was Dirk Koetter. And, Steve, I think you'll second me on that one.
Yeah, you've told the story before. We've told it. You know, we were at the owner's meeting. Koetter had a few pops in him. And we asked him about the draft. I asked him specifically about the first round. And he flat out told us, I love O.J. Howard, hands down. That's the guy I want. And he explained why. And you and I sort of didn't believe him. We were dumbfounded, but he came out and said it, and lo and behold, there he was. Now, I got to say this, though. How does this reflect on Arians, Ira? And Lee, wondering your thought here. Last year, Arians comes in, and he blows out Jameis Winston, first-round pick, number one overall. He blows out Vernon Hargraves, first-round pick. And now it looks like he's going to blow out O.J. Howard. Is Arians just not developing these guys' talents? Is it a reflection of the coaching staff in any way?
Lee, what I think it's a reflection of most of all is the cloud of Bruce Arians. And if we didn't know it before, which we think we did, Lee, we certainly know it now, especially if Howard goes overboard. He certainly made the call on Jameis Winston. Nobody else. Absolutely nobody else. And here comes another first-round pick that Arians is going to weigh in on, in O.J. Howard. Lee, it's the Bruce Arians show right now. He wanted Brady. He got Brady. And ain't nobody getting in the way of Bruce Arians and what he wants done around here.
Well, I'm sure that Arians in his contract has quite a bit of power. I know it's a sore spot for Jason Light to even suggest that Bruce Arians is calling any shots. He doesn't like that, but I think the proof is in the pudding. As you said, Ira, Jason Light's calling the shots. O.J. Howard's still here, and possibly Jameis. And to the Jameis thing, I really believe that if Tom Brady stayed in New England, Jameis would have been back, because the Bucks have been pretty adamant. Their list of quarterbacks they wanted, number one was Brady, number two was Bridgewater, number three was Jameis. Well, Bridgewater, like, hey, I've said this before in your podcast, Ira, Bridgewater's quarterback coach from New Orleans went to Carolina. I can't think of his name, but he was LSU's offensive coordinator. He's the offensive coordinator in Carolina now, so there was, you know, familiarity. So unless the Bucks were going to seriously overpay for Bridgewater, I don't think he comes here. So it very easily could that came down to Brady or Jameis. Brady was available. They went with Brady. What you generally say, Ira, is correct. There's a sense of urgency here. And Bruce Arians, as well as anybody else knows, you know, what's he going to be, 68, 69 this year? He knows he's got a limited amount of time, and I guess he figured, get Tom Brady, if he can get, you know, that quote-unquote no-brainer left tackle by sweetening the pot with O.J. Howard to trade up, he can get a guy with a bigger, quicker impact than he could by waiting for Howard to develop or turn his career around. And also, yeah. Also, there's the money factor. Howard's in the final year of his contract.
Right.
It's the fourth year. Now, they could, the Bucks or whomever picks him up, could extend that, you know, by May 3rd. That's the fifth-year option. They could trigger that option. May 3rd's the deadline, but you also have money here. You know, if you get rid of Howard, you don't have to worry about paying him next year. Next year, I think I've said this before, Sue's not going to be here next year because they have to pay Godwin.
You know, Steve, two more points on this O.J. Howard dynamic. One, I think it goes to the Jason Light mantra, which he said many times, Steve, and here's another example. It looks like, it appears, most draft mistakes are made from the neck up. Steve, this guy's a physical specimen. You know, he's not running a 5'2 now all of a sudden. He's healthy, and he's not getting the job done. He's not productive. So you got that. And two, Steve, here's the irony of what's going on with Arians and Light and the power structure. This comes on the heels of expanded clout for Jason Light under Dirk Cutter, as said by the Glazers publicly, that Light was going to take on a more prominent role during those 3 years of Dirk Cutter, and now he's right back where he started, Steve.
I mean, the O.J. Howard thing remains a mystery, but I understand he's back where he started, sort of in the Lovie Smith, let me get your coffee roll. And, you know, that's how it is. That's at least what I believe, anyway.
I think you brought up the Gaines-Adams trade and how that was such a steal for Dominic. Got to remember, you know, it takes two to tango. You got to remember who the guy was who coughed up a second-round pick for Gaines-Adams, a guy who proved with the Bucks he was totally inept at talent evaluation, and that would be one Lovie Smith.
Yeah, and the story goes Rod Marinelli was obsessed with him and thought he could work with him, and that didn't work out. So Lovie trusted the wrong guy there. I always thought, Ira, the whole Jimmy Giles thing, when you talked to Jimmy Giles, the Buccaneers Ring of Honor member, the great yep. tight end, and Giles said, hey, I'd like to sit down with O.J. Howard. And we remember when Arians was introduced as head coach, Giles was sitting in the front row and seemed very appreciative that Arians was going to welcome the old-timers and welcome them into the fray, and they can come to practice and talk to players and all that. Now, I don't know if any of that ever really happened because we never really saw any of these old-timers around, these ex-Bucks. However, we know that Giles is not a shy guy, and to the best of our knowledge, O.J. Howard never sat down to learn from one of the greats, which was very strange, and frankly, I remember Vernon Hargraves, it took him 2 years to sit down with Rondé Barber, so I don't know. The neck up stuff is very real and very prominent in every draft.
That's a great point, Steve. I had forgotten about the Jimmy Giles factor. Lee, I had many discussions with Jimmy Giles in the last 3 years about O.J. Howard.
Call him.
He was very passionate about getting himself in a position where he could help O.J. Howard personally and teach him the tricks of the trade. Because Howard, in certain ways, reminded Jimmy Giles of himself, a big man who can really move. And that was Giles' forte. Giles didn't catch the 8-yard ball. Giles caught the 18-yard ball. And he averaged, you know, 14, 15, 16 yards a catch, which was unheard of, Lee, back then for a tight end. And as soon as the Bucks drafted Howard, he looked forward to working with Howard. And, Lee, I even mentioned it. I would mention it to Cutter. I would mention it to Arians when I got a chance to be alone with them about Giles' interest, and it never went anywhere. And, Lee, I'll say this. I talked to O.J. Howard about it, and I wanted him to make sure that he knew about Giles wanting to reach out to him. And as far as I know, Lee, it never happened.
All right, Ira, I wanted to run something past you because – fans want to know your confidence level. They want to know what the sage is feeling when it comes to the Buccaneers hierarchy. Nobody's better plugged in than you are with the top of the top of the food chain at One Buck Palace. Now, Bruce Arians in Arizona, he had 5 first-round picks. None of them were any good as first-round picks. 0-5.
Now wait a minute. He was not in control of the draft in Arizona. That's a presumption, Steve.
Of course, it's a presumption. He went there as a 60-year-old head coach, as a powerful, well-respected guy with a young general manager. I think he had a huge, heavy hand in it. So that's my presumption. You're right. But regardless, he was you know, known for being a hard worker, very involved, and he had a big hand. But over
now they did take David Johnson in like the third round, Steve. They did.
Correct. We're talking first round. 0-5 Okay. 0-5 And then now we know Jason Light, before last year, he had taken Mike Evans, Jameis Winston, Hargraves, Howard, and Vea. So maybe he's batting 50% there, or if you, you know, if you consider Jameis, Hargraves, and Howard to be not very good picks, maybe he's 50% if you throw in the first year of Devin White.
Okay.
And, of course, White is a joint pick of Light and Arians. What is your confidence level with their records as they stand in guys in power, and keeping in mind that Jason Light has never had a pick in the bottom third of the first round?
I don't think they're going to screw this up. I think it's going to be hard to screw this up. If they stick to their board, Lee, don't go crazy and get position, you know, centric to a certain degree. Lee, here's what I mean. If there's a run on offensive linemen and four are gone within the first 13 picks, and you know the quarterbacks are going to go, and the cornerback is going to go, and a wide receiver or two might go, well, Lee, I'll say it again. You're probably going to get the second best defensive lineman, at worst the third best defensive line prospect in a solid draft. Lee, take what you get. It's not like you don't need another defensive lineman. You lost two guys. Sue and Pierre Paul got a lot of tread on the tires. Lee, don't go crazy. Don't drop down to 22 to pick up another third-round pick. Go get yourself Kinlaw, Chasen, and call it a day. And then get your running back. I don't hope they don't try to overanalyze this thing, Lee.
Well, I think what Steve may be getting at is their board may be flawed to begin with. When you say stick to the board, it could be, well, they're sticking to a flawed plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Ira. And Lee said it a little differently than I would have. But what I mean is, look, half the draft picks bust out to begin with anyway. So even if you say it's hard to screw this up, it's kind of actually easy to screw it up. And that's what makes this draft and every draft so interesting.
Lee, the more I'm thinking about this thing, about the move up from 14 to 8, you know, most fans would say, ah, that's only six spots. You're not going to pay a price. Yes, you are, Lee. Yeah. Yes, you are. If O.J. Howard's not involved in that deal, it could cost you your second-round pick. I don't think a third-round pick's going to get the job done in moving up six spots in the first round. This is not moving up six spots in the third round. Teams will squeeze you. They will squeeze you. They have the leverage when you make that phone call. So, Lee, this is a right tackle. This is a right tackle.
That's a good point.
Smith is not going to lose his starting job in 2020. He could lose it in 2021 and be gone, but not in 2020. That's not going to happen.
You hit the nail on the head, and I just had an epiphany. You hit the nail on the head. If you're trading up into the first 10 picks of the draft to get a tackle, he better be Donovan Smith's replacement after Smith leaves next year. Now, I'm not saying Smith is leaving next year, but what I am saying is he's got guaranteed money for 2020. You don't draft a right tackle in the top 10. You hit the nail on the head, Ira. That's why you're Ira. That's why you're the sage, Ira. You have no business trading up into the top 10 to get a right tackle unless you have that guy pegged to replace Donovan Smith next season.
Now, and you're backing up my point. Now, Steve, you disagreed with me about that in terms of looking ahead and looking forward. You said it's all about 2020, Lee and Steve, and you downplayed this versatility and flexibility of this guy you're going to draft ostensibly to play right tackle. But, Steve, I'll say this. Covered a lot of drafts, and maybe my memory's fleeting here, but moving into the top 10 and trading up and giving up resources and assets for a right tackle, Steve, that doesn't happen in the NFL draft.
Not typically, no. Not at all. And but it really depends on how much you have to give up. So it's always about right in the moment, and that's what makes it so hard to predict. But if your guy is there, and look, they're out of money at this point unless they make some changes or ask some people to restructure deals. I mean, you can't get worse on the offensive line, and I expect what's his name, the Earl of Watford, to come back on a nothing deal. But
DeMar's still waiting for a phone call, Stevie.
I don't know if you have to worry about the future, but look, some of these guys in the draft, these top four tackles that we've talked about, you know, Bill Polian and others believe that they're not necessarily guys who can play both positions.
That's another point. I have yet to see anybody compare, Wills or Becton to Jonathan Ogden, Lee. I mean, we're talking about the best of this particular group. Ain't nobody talking about Walter Jones over here.
I'll quote Bill Polian. The next Gene Upshaw is not in this draft.
Well, look, these guys are still super talents. I was listening to Sean O'Hara break down all the these top four guys on Sirius XM NFL radio the other day. And right. His favorite is Jedrick Willis out of Alabama. He compares him to Taylor Lewan and Joe Staley, both multi-year Pro Bowlers. But he was pretty adamant that Andrew Thomas out of Georgia is a pure left tackle. And that's what makes this draft exciting for the teams who need a tackle, is because these guys are left tackles. And, you know, and obviously Wills is a different situation, but, you know, I don't know. You know, you have to think long term, but you got to think short term. But speaking of thinking down the road, Ira, got to ask you this because I think it ties to the draft. Amari Cooper gets $20 million a year. Brandon Cooks signs a deal for over $16 million a year. And there's Chris Godwin sitting out there. And you could argue that if Godwin has another year like he did last year, he is better than both of those players. And he's super young. And the market for receivers in a passing league is one that continues to explode. I mean, they went on record, Arians, multiple times saying he wanted to get a deal done with Godwin now, get that extension done before the season. Is it going to happen? Have things changed? And will the Buccaneers be more likely to draft a receiver here, maybe the second or third round, because this receiver class is so deep? Everybody and their brother says you can get a first-round quality receiver in round two. Will they maybe draft one in case they lose Godwin, or to put some pressure on him? How do you think this goes?
Lee, I don't have a big issue with the Bucs and a wide receiver in round three. Lee, I don't have a big problem. That could mean you go in offense with your first three picks, but Lee, so be it. You got number 12 under center, who's going to be here for 2 years. I think as long as Brady's here, Lee, I'll say this. As long as Brady's under center for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are going nowhere. Nowhere. Heck, that's part of the reason, maybe a big part of the reason Brady took the job. Lee, he may not have taken it without those two guys.
He didn't take it often.
He didn't take it because of O.J. Howard, and he didn't take it because of Ronald Jones. He didn't. Lee, the question is, you know, when do you extend Godwin? When do you extend him? Well, they don't have to do it right now. They don't have to. Maybe they feel they'll be in better cap shape down the line. We shall see. As you suggest, Sue's not going to be here in 2021. I think that's a given. I'm a little surprised he's back now. I think if Brady wasn't here, I don't think they'd necessarily bring Sue back, Lee.
Yes and no. Yes, I agree with your final assumption. No being it was Brady who, you know, from what I understand, when the Bucs got Brady, Sue, I might want to stick around.
Yeah, I've seen some, but Lee, I've even seen some suggestions about trading Mike Evans for a first-round pick. I think that's just crazy. That's nuts. If the Bucs even thought about that, I would say that Brady would put Jason Light in a chokehold.
If that was serious, if Light was seriously talking about trading Mike Evans, I would ask him if he's drinking hand sanitizer.
You know, Steve, as good as some of these wide receivers are that are going to be off the board in the first round and maybe even into the second round, Mike Evans is a proven commodity. Chris Godwin's a proven commodity. CeeDee Lamb hasn't caught a ball yet, Lee. Judy hasn't caught a ball. Riggs hasn't caught a ball, Steve. And you still got the bust factor, you know, as you said, 50%. And there's been other receivers that are look as promising as these guys that never made it. Steve, remember this guy, Charles Rogers from the Lions? I think he was the second pick in the draft. Remember the Lions took a wide receiver in the first round like three straight years? Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, Mike Williams was in there.
Yeah, Mike Williams was in there. So, you know, Steve, Godwin's not going anywhere. It's just a question of when do they extend him.
Ira, I wanted to see what you thought of this before we head over to Sean Sullivan, Bill Curry Ford. Remember, everyone, Bill Curry Ford, 60 years in Tampa, Tampa's first family of Ford, presents all of Ira's work here at JoeBucksFan.com. And GM Sean Sullivan is the biggest Bucks fan. Well, you haven't met any bigger. I'll say it that way. You can talk to him. He will help you personally. And you will get an Ira Kaufman Joe Bucks fan discount if you ask for it. So definitely do that. BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping today. We'll get Sean's take on the draft shortly. Ira, Tony Dungy was on the radio yesterday, and I thought it was interesting that he spoke about how Peyton Manning would want to know. He'd come in, talk to Dungy, hey, who are we looking at in the draft? What are we doing? Who are we going after? But he didn't say, we got to get this guy. But when it came to the free agency, that Manning was heavily involved and would be all over it and say and bang the table for certain guys, and Dungy gave a couple of examples. What do you think Brady is doing? You think he's already been on the phone and conference calling Light and Arian saying, who are we looking at? I want to watch some tape. And I mean, the guy's obviously sitting home doing nothing, and he's very involved. If Manning was doing it, you think Brady's just wants to know, and are they answering that question for him?
I'd be shocked if it wasn't the same exact situation, Lee. Moderate interest in the draft, not like he's burning his eyes out watching the tape like Jason Light and his scouts, but in terms of free agency, Lee, Brady's been in this league 20 years, Lee. He knows every player in this league, offense, defense, what they do well, what they're shaky on. And I'm talking about maybe the backup cornerback on the Pittsburgh Steelers. He knows these guys, Lee. And, yes, he's got an interest. And, yes, he's got a short window. And, Lee, when you put those two things together, he wants a little bit of input. He's not going to make the call, but he wants to be heard. And, Lee, from what I can gather, he's going to be heard.
I imagine that was part of the deal to come here. I'm not saying he's got power, but I'm sure he's got influence.
Yeah, I just
Chris Russo would say, what do you want me to say?
You know, Steve, I'm not saying he's going to break down Becton and, you know, Worf's, you know, ability at right tackle. Steve, I don't think it's going to go that far. But
he might.
You mentioned free agency, guys that have already played in this league, and Brady's a pack rat, like Manning. He's got a scouting report on everybody. And Steve, if the Bucks are smart, they'd listen to him a little bit.
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting commentary. I don't know if I had ever heard that before, that Dungy just coming in saying about the draft that Manning had his thoughts. He'd want to know who was good, who we were looking at, but he didn't bang the table. That was only reserved for free agency. But of course, you know, Tony Dungy had a Hall of Fame general manager, and in town here we have Jason Light. So I don't know if there was a different confidence level with that Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady, who doesn't know these guys. But I don't know, just interesting stuff. One little tidbit, Ira, that Dungy mentioned, and I know you're working on a draft-related column for next week. Dungy talked about how Warrick Dunn was, you know, the number one overall pick by the Bucks, number one pick, like 11th overall or something, in 1997. He said Derek Brooks worked on him and pounded him and hounded him for 2 months to draft Warrick Dunn. And that was one of the reasons that they eventually caved and took Dunn a little bit more seriously than they might have. And he said literally every day for 2 months, Brooks was hounding him and hounding him to draft Warrick Dunn. And I think, ironically, the next guy off the board, it was Tony Gonzalez.
Very interesting. Now, Steve, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and Lee always says that. And Warrick Dunn had a heck of a career. He ain't Tony Gonzalez. But, you know, he was very, very productive for the Bucks for a long time. Then went to Atlanta and had some good years for the Falcons. Lee, that was Brooks had only been in the league 2 years when he was flexing his muscles like that. It's a little surprising he had that kind of clout. He wasn't necessarily on a Hall of Fame trajectory at that point. It was only year three. But, Lee, you know, I do the Identity Tampa 2 with Brooks every week. And every time in the last month we talk about running backs in the draft, Brooks cannot help himself with Cam Akers. He just continues to talk about Cam Akers, Lee, and those seminal blood runs deep, Lee. It just does. And if Cam Akers was playing for Auburn, not Florida State, I don't know if Brooks would be talking him up like that. And I think Cam Akers is a heck of a prospect. So, Lee, in that regard, with that FSU connection, it doesn't surprise me what Brooks was saying about Warrick Dunn.
No, not at all. Didn't surprise me at all.
You know, and it turns out that it was a heck of a pick by the Bucks. I think Warrick Dunn could be a candidate for the Ring of Honor, gentlemen. I mean, you're all over me when I mentioned Gerald McCoy. I don't know how you feel about Warrick Dunn. I'm sticking with my Gerald McCoy suggestion, and I think Dunn might be a worthy candidate.
Yeah, he might be, especially if the Bucks don't fare too well and sort of the herd is kind of thin for candidates. But he's obviously, this isn't the Hall of Fame. His off-the-field work can factor in, and I think he'd be a great choice. All right, let's talk some draft with general manager Sean Sullivan, Bill Curry Ford, but he's really just a Bucks fan and a year-round draft guru. All right, Sage, so we are here now with Sean Sullivan, our in-house draft guru, and we're not just kissing his ass because we love Bill Curry Ford. Sean is the real deal, 24/7, studying the draft for decades. Anybody who listened to him with us on the podcast before the combine heard him really get into the players, and that was fun. So, Sean, welcome in. We can't wait to talk some draft. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific, Steve. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you, Ira. As a Bucks fan, I'm just super happy to be included in this podcast, and I'm raring to go.
All right, before we get to the draft, Sean, you mentioned in your recent story on JoeBucksFan.com that you've sort of changed your philosophy along with the Bucks. You're completely all in now for 2020, and you can't think too far ahead because with Tom Brady, that's just not what we're doing now. And you're all for sticking Jason Peters onto the roster. He's still a free agent, longtime Pro Bowler, Eagles great, putting him in at right tackle, and worrying about drafting a right tackle later. You still feel strongly about that, and why should the Bucks go there?
Super strong about it, Steve. Based on the information that I gave in the article, it's I have like three major reasons why I believe that it's so important. And I think first, the Tom Brady thing, I think it just took, with everything going on, it just took me, I'm still in awe that we have Tom Brady as our quarterback. You know, I don't think it's going to really set in for us as fans until we actually see him in the jersey. He's on the practice field. He's throwing balls to Mike Evans. I think it's going to really hit me then. But I've had some time, so I'm going through just trying to see if I can see what the Bucks' plans are doing, because, you know, everything is a misdirection during the draft, as you know, and it always has been. Sometimes I feel like we misdirect ourselves, you know, obviously with some of our draft picks. But I'm very interested in a 43-year-old quarterback trying to prove himself this year. And everybody's like, oh, it's just simple and easy. Let's just get him a right tackle in the first round because Brady's going to want a tackle. Well, if you follow Brady's career, he's one of the fastest quarterbacks out of the pocket releasing the ball, right? He's very hard to sack. And when they've been able to get to him is the only time he's ever lost, right? So I really think that we're going to see a different offense than what we saw last year with Winston. I really think Brady's going to get the ball on time. He's going to hit his short passes. He's, you know, he's going to take his shots, but I think we're going to see a much more controlled passing game. And I think we're finally going to see a running game complement to Tom Brady, which is why my thought is, why on earth would we draft a tackle in the 9th pick or the 14th pick if we trade draft capital and then develop him over the next few years for the next quarterback? I would prefer to have Jason Peters from day one. He can play right tackle. He's a Super Bowl champion, 9-time Pro Bowler. He was an All-Pro twice. Ira would have to comment to this, but I believe he is a first-ballot Hall of Famer. And he was also on the All-Decades team. I think he instantly brings in credibility to our line. I think he helps everybody right away. And I would be very excited to see him lining up there and not investing in a 50 to 40% chance of hitting on a tackle in the first round. And by the way, there's no Quentin Nelson. Just like I said, I can find holes in every single tackle that they come up with. Every one of them is developmental. There's no surefire day one right tackle that you can just put in there and be fine with. I just don't see it.
Well, a couple of things for Sean. One, Sean, they are all in. There's no question. You know, you look at Buccaneers.com, and they control that. That's their official site. And I see a couple of their headlines over the last few weeks, and it says all in. So we're not making that up, Sean. We're not making it up. It's coming from the franchise itself. But, Sean, there's going to be life beyond Tom Brady. You know it, and I know it. And life beyond Bruce Arians. So, Sean, they might make the playoffs in 2020. They should, especially with an extra team in there from each conference. But, Sean, in 2 years, you don't want to be back to square one with a bunch of 30-year-olds and not much future. So, Sean, what about balancing the next 2 years with life beyond Brady?
I understand that logic, Ira, and I will tell you that the last 14 seasons we've been developing players. And how has that gone for us? Right? We've been looking for the future for 14 consecutive seasons. It's not done well for us. We have a chance with a Hall of Fame quarterback guy to lead our team. I'm all in on this bandwagon. I just can't tell you how excited I am to have him behind center. And I can't imagine drafting a guy. Let's just say Andrew Thomas from Georgia falls to us at 14. Or say we trade up, we trade our second round pick, our first round pick, and a fourth round pick to trade up five picks to get, a tackle they like better. Let's just say.
Say it's Becton or something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Becton, that's fine. But he's still a project at right tackle. Is a right tackle worth all that draft capital? I've always been taught in football, and obviously you guys are the experts, but I will tell you, I have never, ever heard anybody say, draft a right tackle high.
I'm with you, Sean. And in that regards, Sean, if the four tackles are off the board, there's no reason to panic, Sean, in my mind, to go crazy for a right tackle when you can sit there, and I've told this to Steve and Lee, and most likely, if there's a flurry on tackles, and you know the quarterbacks are going to go, and the cornerback is going to go, and one of the receivers is going to go, Sean, it probably means, and Derek Brown will be gone, you're probably going to get a crack at the second or third best defensive lineman in the entire draft. And, Mr. Sullivan, what's wrong with that?
I agree with you, Ira. That's where I was. That was where I was last week. I was still, let's get a... You know who I love out of LSU is the pass rusher, right, Chaisson? So,
yes.
You know, last time we had our draft talk a month ago, that was before Tom Brady was signed, unless I always said
that's
it
right.
Changes.
That's right.
I said it's going to change free agency, it's going to change my opinion. So you draft, you're talking about one of the defensive line prospects. I mean, they even talked about Derek Brown falling. I don't know if I want to draft a defensive tackle to play 30 or 40% of the snaps. Is that really what I want out of the first round when I'm trying to go deep into the playoffs and win a Super Bowl and I have 1 year to do it? I don't know if I want someone sharing snaps. I know that I listened to Steve and I know Steve was talking about a tackle and having him, share time with Sue and Vea, because they don't play full games anyway. And I feel like there's some really great defensive tackle depth that we can get in the third and fourth round that I think would be terrific to fill in those gaps. I just think in the first round, my attitude's completely changed. I want a player that's going to be on the field from day one that is a home run hitter, that is going to change the defense, how they look at us. I want someone that's going to also be on special teams. I think we need to improve our special teams, and I think there's a player in the first round that I don't know, Steve, it's okay if you want me to start, but this kind of leads me into my first draft pick at 14.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, as you know, Joe Buckspan wrote an article about, that was, by the way, was terrific, as all of your articles are. And I was really intrigued by it when I first read it about Luke Easterling and USA Today talking about what if the Bucks drafted Henry Ruggs out of Alabama, which, if you remember, during our draft special, I said he was the best receiver in the draft before. That was like before a lot of people even had him third or fourth ranked. I had him number one. And Ira even asked if I would take him over Julio Jones, which I said I would. I said, that's the kind of impact this guy is. I think he's a surefire. He's going to be one of the best receivers in the league from day one. I believe that Henry Ruggs was number one overall in the draft. And I believe that he was going to be one of the top receivers ever to come out of Alabama. And that includes Ira's favorite receiver for the Falcons.
Sean, couldn't he just be one of these speed guys that don't make it in the pros?
I think that's where people get lost, is because he ran a 4.24 at the combine, and he's 5'11", 188, and everybody compares him to John Ross, who ran the 4.22 that the Bengals got. Well, you know, the way Henry runs is built, he's built like a running back. And he runs, he's the fastest guy in the field. His hands are unbelievably good. So just to put this in perspective, he had, in his college career, he had 98 touches. And out of those 98 touches, he scored 26 touchdowns. So that means every third time he touched the ball, I think it's 3.6 times he touched the ball, he
right.
scored a touchdown.
Right.
That doesn't even count the touchdowns that were called back, because he actually had several touchdowns called back last year, you know, for other penalties. I'm thinking, this is the kind of guy that changes the team. And he fits Bruce Arians' wide receiver to a T. Bruce Arians loves these fast guys. He loves the guys with great hands. Not to mention Henry Ruggs. Well, not only will he be the fastest player on our team, which Bruce Arians loves speed, he's also going to be our kick returner, punt returner from day one. And we finally have an exciting punt returner, an exciting kick return from day one. This guy changes the game. He changes field position for us. He obviously is going to go against the third best cornerback on the other team. What is that going to open up for us underneath and long? I'm just saying, if we're going to go all in, then let's get a player that changes how the defense looks at us from day one.
Now, Sean, the argument that you've used on the defensive tackle spot in terms of being deep, and Sean, I can certainly challenge you and throw that up at you with the wide receiver spot and suggest that the Bucs could get a impact player at that position in round three. Is that feasible?
Yes, it is. I actually have, there are several prospects that I really like in this draft. I was looking at a gentleman that puts us closer to a Super Bowl. That's all I'm saying. There are receivers that you can get. I mean, this is such a deep wide receiver draft, but there's three guys that are starters from day one, and there's one guy that sticks out to me as a can't miss. I believe that he's going to be one of the top receivers in the last decade.
Wow.
I've never seen anybody move like him on the field, played against the top defensive backs in the country every game, and made him look silly. I mean, this gentleman is special. And I'm going to tell you, it's not just because he runs a 4.24. There's plenty of guys that run 4.24s. And when I say plenty, I mean, there's probably five guys in this draft that run a sub 4.3. And some of them you've never heard of because they play at small school.
To pin you down, Sean, if Ruggs is available, would you draft him? He's your he's your number one pick.
Based on the fact that we signed Tom Brady,
I say you
draft Henry Ruggs at 14 and you just go home giddy.
Let's say the Raiders draft Ruggs after the Jets draft CeeDee Lamb. What do you do?
I think I trade down and I go into the lower round of the first round.
Okay.
And I see what's available. It's kind of, I don't want to draft a tackle at 14. Based on what I'm seeing right now, I think you might have to trade up to get one of those top four tackles at this point. What I am thinking is Bruce Arians said he doesn't want to draft a tackle for someone else to develop for the next coach to have, right? If that holds true and Arians is really in charge of this draft, I don't think he goes tackle. I think maybe he trades up for one of these special players.
Sean, in the back of your mind, you're not saying that part of this Ruggs scenario. Are you suggesting that that could also lead to moving on from Chris Godwin at some point?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I thought it was ridiculous, Ira, when I first read the article. When Joe Bucks fan first printed it, I went back and I read the article from Luke Easterling at USA Today, and I read the article and I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, you have Godwin, you have Evans, how are you going to pay him? And then I'm looking at the third wide receiver spot. We have two fourth-round picks. We have a third-round pick. This is a deep wide receiver draft. But that's me thinking like I always have. I've always been thinking about picking players, developing them for the future, like I have for the last 14 years. Now I just want a plug-and-play guy from day one that's going to help Brady win a Super Bowl from day one.
Okay.
And I think this guy does that.
All right. Now, keeping with the plug-and-play theme, and I agree with you, and I've mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast, and what we're going to play within your scenario. Let's say Ruggs is gone and you don't want to do the offensive tackle for the reasons you specified. And then we are looking to trade down. And of course, the Bucs have those scenarios played out. If you trade way down, let's say you go back down to 23.
Okay.
For example, which is going to get you a good pick in return. Do you draft, are any of these running backs, do you believe, in the draft worthy of a first round pick? DeAndre Swift, Dobbins. Would you do that in the first round, or are you going to go somewhere else there?
I guess that's a hard question. It depends on if someone else gets a run on the running back. So Swift is primarily the number one running back in a lot of people's minds. Here's a guy that played at Georgia. He actually fumbled more often than any of the other top running backs, which worries me. He's never been healthy for a full season. He's always had nagging injuries that kept him out of the games. If you can't stay healthy in college, I just have a tough time drafting you for the pros. It's just a harder place to play. I don't think it's going to get any easier. Now, are there exceptions? I'm sure Adrian Peterson was an exception. I wouldn't have taken him off my board, but the Swift guy bothers me with all of the nagging injuries. You go to Dobbins at Ohio State. I think Dobbins is a terrific prospect. If you look at a lot of his runs, though, he reminds me a little bit of Rojo at USC, the holes that he was running through. I just didn't see a lot from him as far as vision-wise. He had these big holes at Ohio State that he was running through, and I was like, I was trying to really get on board with Dobbins, and there's just something about him that makes me, you know, pull back. And I think Rojo, the drafting of Rojo kind of screwed me up a little bit because I went back and I really want to see how far these guys run before first contact, and Dobbins is one of those guys that didn't get a lot of first contact.
Sean, you're not envisioning the Buccaneer offensive line opening up those kind of holes, correct?
No, I believe that Brady helps the running game. No doubt that he helps the running game. And I don't think our offensive line is ever going to be compared to the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. But I will tell you that the offensive line does get a bad rap for some of these things because Jameis held onto the ball a long period of time. He waited for longer developing routes down the field, which is how the offense was designed, which puts a lot of pressure on pass protection.
Sean, yeah. let me turn you to the running back situation, because we know we read your piece that and you are in lockstep with Ira as far as Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a guy you want on this team.
Love him.
Now,
yeah, absolutely love him.
I guess a question I have for Ira and for you, Sean, is you both love him. You both want him. How early is too early for this guy, and how would you manipulate the draft to try to get there if you're looking to trade up, down, all that?
Sean, I got a feeling he's going to be there mid-second round. I got a feeling. And along those lines, I will ask you, Sean, because you scout these guys like nobody's business, tell me the difference between our young man from LSU and Mr. Cam Akers, who Derek Brooks never forgets to remind me might be the best running back prospect in this draft. Of course, he's an FSU kid. Sean, what's going on between the Akers and Helaire comparison?
I think it just comes down to who is a better fit for the Buccaneers currently with our current situation and who's going to help us win right away. With Clyde, and I like calling him Clyde, as you noticed in the article, I think it'd be great to just yell Clyde every time he ran the ball, you know, as a fan, like a Bucs fan. I think that'd be kind of fun. As you know, I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan, and so I love that name. So anyway, I think he'd be just awesome. I think hands are the biggest part. You know, they said that when you look at him at Florida State, he had good hands. He doesn't have great hands. So if you – and he's also – I know that Lee always talks about the offensive line at Florida State, and I think that Cam Akers, I like him better than I do some of the other top running backs. I like Cam better than I like Swift and Dobbins. So I think that the wild card here is Taylor out of Wisconsin. I don't know how well he translates only because of how many carries he's had in 3 years. I like the idea of drafting a running back like what they did with Kamara in New Orleans, where he didn't have a lot of touches coming out. He was very fresh. I like the idea. Then on the other hand, you know, you do have McCaffrey, who is now the highest paid running back in the NFL, who has hands and can run the ball. He's such a difference maker. I just think that Clyde Edwards is closer to McCaffrey than Cam Akers. That's the biggest difference to me. And I know that Akers has a better 40 time. I think that Edwards has better vision. I think he has better hands. I think he played in a pass pro offense. He played with what's going to be the number one pick in the draft in Burrow. I think he's going to be a transition very easy from Burrow to Brady. I think they're very similar quarterbacks. And I think Burrow is going to be a very similar thrower to Brady in the pros.
Sean, I think the Bucs focus on a running back's hands and his ability to get open in space. Sean, I think that's going to help them in terms of the right kind of running back dropping to them as opposed to just a pure runner like Taylor. I think that helps.
I think it does too. I think we get Clyde at 45. I don't think we have to move, Steve. I think we get him at 45. I think that there are people that are going to value the fact that he ran a slower 40.
Yes.
He ran a 4.54. I'm sure at his pro day he would have run better than that. I think it was interrupted. I don't think he ran at his pro day. I think he would have ran again before the draft if, you know, if the circumstances were different right now. I don't care about his speed. There's a lot of 4.5 running backs in the NFL that are amazing running backs because they have vision. They follow their blocks. When you watch Clyde, watch how he follows his tackles. He's a patient runner. He's very similar in stature to me to Maurice Jones-Drew. Maurice could get lost behind the tackles. If you notice, Maurice would run, he'd wait for it to develop, he'd get behind him, and then he would wait for the tackle to open, and then right when he got that little sliver, he would gone. But what I think is special about Clyde isn't the fact that he's a running back, and I think that that's where Cam Akers is the better running back. But as a whole, I think that what Clyde brings to you is he's the guy that gets open so effortlessly. If you just watch him, it's amazing. Coming off the line of scrimmage, you could line him up as a five receiver set, which is what I believe we're going to line up some this year. You can line him up at receiver. You can line him up in the slot. I think that he has this knack for finding the soft spot and sitting down and being there for his quarterback. And I think Brady is going to love this guy. I think he catches 55 balls his rookie year.
All right, Sean. Now let's just say that, Dave Gettleman with the Giants, who's known for drafting running backs and who's trying to build with a lot of weapons around a brand new young quarterback that they like. And let's say he at 36, he takes Edwards-Helaire. He's gone. What do you do in the second round? Who else do you like in round two?
Well, I don't know. So the other running backs I like I like Akers and I like Gibson and I like Zach Moss. Is another guy that's out of Utah that a lot of people aren't talking about that has hands, runs with power. I just think that's too high for them at 45. I think we could get, you know, I think you could get them in the lower end of the second round and at the top of the third round. I think that at that point I'd have to look and see what tackle was available. And then instead of drafting my tackle in the third round, I would draft my tackle in the second, and then I would draft my running back in the third if that happens.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, well, Sean, I want to remind everybody, in case they fast-forwarded here in the middle, of two things. One, Lee DeCamper did not fall off the face of the earth. Lee stepped aside when Sean came in, so he's fine. And we hope you enjoyed the Lee in the beginning part of the podcast. Sean is our resident draft guru, but Sean, of course, you're also the general manager of Bill Curry Ford. What's going on at Bill Curry Ford? You know, a lot of people are wondering sometimes what businesses are open. I know you've been busy, and I know we've sent a lot of Joe Bucks fan folks to your website and to you personally. What do you want to tell everybody about what's happening today at Bill Curry Ford?
First thing, Steve, is we are considered an essential business in the state of Florida, and I think a lot of people question that. I get that answer. People ask me that question all the time. We are actually responsible for the Tampa TPD first responder contract. So we keep all the police cars for the Tampa PD on the road. We work on all of the fire trucks for Tampa, as well as first responder vehicles that have to stay running during this time. We also have heavy-duty truck center. Our fleet center works on the 9000s that drive the Publix trucks, that drive the Walmart trucks, that drive the, I guess, any of the stores that are currently open. But like Walmart and Publix, we keep their trucks running so they can bring supplies to the stores. So when people think of the car dealership, they only think of the sales department, but we actually are a very big store. We have a lot of different revenues for the community. You know, we have one of the largest parts distributors in the southeastern United States. So if a part in some part of Florida and they needed a part to get a truck back on the road, it's probably coming from Bill Curry Ford. We have over $2 million in parts at any given time for Ford vehicles and Ford trucks. So that's a big aspect. So we have the parts and we have the service. As far as sales are going, our sales haven't slowed down. We follow the CDC rules. We've moved all of our tables. We're giving, we give hand sanitizer. I have a full-time, cleaning person who cleans every table when a customer comes in. We wipe it, it's cleaned immediately. All the door handles and windows are cleaned by the hour.
Can you give Ira a bath? Ira could really use a sponge bath.
Yeah, probably. That's right. If I could find a way to make money in it, Steve, I probably would. I probably would help him with that. I was going to tell you that the 84 for zero and the 6 months deferred payments has been a big hit. Obviously, our new car business is excelling right now. A lot of people are worried. They've been furloughed from their job, and they need help with some payments just for a few months until we're out of this. Ford Credit has deferred payments for people who currently have Ford loans up to 3 months. So if you have a Ford vehicle and you need help, Ford is there for you. And then Bill Curry Ford is there for you. If you want to trade and you want to take a high interest loan to 0%, Ford's credit is approving everyone at 0% right now. It's crazy. We're getting 72 months approved and then 84 for the larger vehicles. And then we're deferring payments up to 6 months and you still get our lifetime warranty with it. So we're lowering payments for people and then setting them up for a September 1st payment. Right now I have no payments till 2021. That's a program that Bill Curry started working with Ford Credit to do that. So if you come into finance with Ford Credit, it's not compatible with anything other that you advertise. But what we're doing is for customers who really just can't take a payment till next year, we're deferring till January 1st, 2021.
Sean, what are you doing with people that want to test drive a vehicle?
So when they come in for a test drive, the salesman does not go on the test drive with the customer. So they have to sign a insurance affidavit. They give us their driver's license and insurance, and we allow them to take the test drive by themselves.
Nice.
So we keep our social distancing. Yes. We've been delivering several cars to people's homes, and we just started. I'm very excited to announce that our service vans, our home service vans, are now up and running starting tomorrow morning. I will be able to do service in people's homes instead of having to come to the store. So these vans are full service departments on wheels. They come with a master certified tech. They come out to your home. They can do recalls, which is a big deal. If you have a recall on your vehicle right now, they can come to your house and do the recall. We can then at the same time change your oil, do your tires, do your tire rotation. It's a full service shop that comes to your home.
Wow,
that is fantastic! And
I'm very excited about it.
And
Ira,
if you ever need an oil change on that beautiful vehicle of yours, I'm sure they'll bring you lunch too from the new cafe coming.
I wanted to thank a couple of customers sent to me by you guys. Coach Travis Combs came in and bought two vehicles, one for him and his wife. Just a class act. Just amazing people. I sat down and talked football with them. It just reminds me of how great your fan base is, that Joe Bucks fan. Like the people that love the team, that love getting information from Joe Bucks fan, and love talking Bucks. Just fans. I love talking Bucks with them. And Zach the Man Beast contacted me. He's a big Joe Bucks fan follower. Working right now to sell him a vehicle. Just very excited to be able to talk football with people in this time, because everyone needs football right now. We need the distraction, and I love it. And I need a distraction from selling cars. So I enjoy talking football with everybody that comes in.
Steve, yeah. I got a general question for Sean on the draft. And Sean, you're in a good vantage point to comment on this. This unusual situation we're in 2020, in terms of the teams, the scouting departments, the general managers, where the accent is not on these conversations with prospects, but it's much, much more focused on the tape of prospects. Sean, some people think that's going to lead to more mistakes at the top ends of the draft. I'm looking at it the other way. I think it's getting back to basics. What do you think?
I love that. I love the fact that people are sitting and watching tape. I love watching tape. I know it bores people to death. They'd rather watch a live football game. I love to watch football, don't get me wrong. But I love watching tape of these players. If the Bucks ever hired me to be a scout, that's all I would ever do, is I would just watch tape because I love it that much. I think you get confused when you go to the combine. I think what you're doing is at the combine, you're just basically looking at your notes from your tape and saying, okay, the guy is 6'6", okay? The guy does weigh 311 pounds, and is everything that I saw on film, it's backed up by his measurements. But then I think at the other time, these guys had become stars at the combine, but then weren't stars at their colleges. I don't get it. How you get enamored with these guys? You watch the tape. You watch production. You watch who they're playing against. And I don't think you can go wrong there. I follow the draft every year. The guys that I want the Bucks to draft, they never draft. I watch them play at other professional teams, and they excel, and it makes me feel good because – I'm like, I knew that guy was going to be good. You know, it's fun for fans to look at that and say, I knew Dalvin Cook was going to be a superstar. I knew it then. I knew that we should have drafted him. And it hurts me when I, like, have the article on Joe Bucks Fan last night where I'm reading that O.J. Howard is on the trade block. when we drafted him at 19 and we can't even get a second round draft pick for him. It sucks when you're a fan and you knew that would Jameis still be our quarterback if Dalvin Cook was running for us right now? Would we have only won 7 games last year with Dalvin Cook at running back? And it's not going to be fair to Tom if we don't get him a running back.
Yeah, the draft is a lot of fun because it always shapes the history of not only the league, but of your favorite team. And if you're into the draft, you can sort of play the what-if game all through the offseason and in future years. And the sport of it is fantastic. Sean, I'm taking you to round 3 of the draft. We talked about 1. We talked about 2.
Yep.
What are some thoughts and a couple of players you want fans to keep their eye on?
So before we get to 76, just to reiterate, if we add Henry Ruggs and we add Clyde Edwards to our team, we're instantly better. There's nobody in the whole world that can convince me that adding those two players doesn't make our team instantly better. No one's going to be able to convince me of that. But going into pick 76, the Bucs actually had talked to this gentleman at the Combine, and I know they always try to keep it secret who they talk to. And I know that you mentioned this last time on the podcast, but Ezra Cleveland out of Boise State, and he's getting a lot of pub right now as a right tackle. And I don't want to use the word developmental, but I'm going to use it because I want to sign, I want to sign Jason Peters, and then let like somebody like Ezra Cleveland at 76, let him sit behind a future Hall of Famer for a year or two and let him see what a professional is from day one. So I think he gives us depth. The other guy I'm looking at, Steve, before you tell me what if he's gone, is Isaiah Wilson. I'm in love with this guy. So Isaiah Wilson is out of Georgia. Okay? He's 6'7", 340 pounds. He was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school. He's coming out as a sophomore, so he's going to be a junior. So he's only got 2 years of college experience. He is phenomenal.
Another tackle.
He's a tackle. I like him better than Ezra Cleveland, but the reason why I mentioned Ezra Cleveland is because I'm a big fan of Gil Brandt. And I listen to him almost every day. I'm sure you know who the Godfather is, Gil Brandt. And he absolutely is in love with Ezra Cleveland. And then I saw the Bucks link to Ezra Cleveland. And then I was like, okay, well, let me do some more research on him. And I do like him. But before I did that, I was in love with Isaiah Wilson. Big program, played in big games, right size. He's absolutely a people mover. And what they're talking about is he's a raw prospect. And I'm like, how do you have a guy that started for Georgia who's 6'7", 340 pounds, who has an amazing grade on the 2019 season? Some of the draft people I don't understand.
You see safety as a position of need possibly in the third round?
If they draft a safety, Ira, I won't ever talk about it. I can't take it. I can't deal with them drafting another safety. They're going to draft a safety, move him to corner, move him back to safety, move him to linebacker, and then we'll get rid of him. Or we'll draft a corner and then make him into a safety. I mean, I can't deal with it anymore. That whole roller coaster. We need to sign Tony Jefferson is a guy that the Bucs have been linked to. As you know, he's an All-Pro from Baltimore. Blew his knee out last year. They're saying he's healthy. He's asking for $11 million. No one signed him. I think that after the draft, his price is going to come down, and I think you add somebody like Tony Jefferson as an all-pro safety to the backside. I think that's the thing that Jason Light was talking about, is I'm going to wait till after the draft and see some of these cuts and see some of these veterans who haven't signed and see if I can get a bargain. Well,
yeah,
Tony
absolutely.
Jefferson might want to play with great.
Yes.
I mean, this guy's the real deal. He's
especially at safety. I mean, and Light's done that before. We saw he tried with T.J. Ward. That flopped. But, I mean, the safeties are out there if you want to add an experienced safety.
Well, T.J. Ward did play at a position, too, Steve. I mean, that was unfair to him. He played a completely different position than he played when he was a Pro Bowler at Denver.
Welcome to the Bucs, Mr. Sullivan. Welcome to the Bucs.
We took a strong safety who's strong against the run and plays the line of scrimmage, and we made him a free safety to roam around and get completely run. Like, he wasn't a tight safety who's going to stay on the receiver. I mean, that was not his game.
Steve, one more quick one from me. Sean, this is a 5% chance, but it's intriguing. I got it at 5%. You might have it at 1%. But, Sean, you got to address this. The Bucs are sitting at 14. They didn't move up for a tackle. And lo and behold, Isaiah Simmons is still on the board. What do you do?
Oh, I know you love this guy, Isaiah Simmons. What position are you going to play him at, Ira?
You're going to play him at the slot corner.
You're going to play him at slot corner, but he didn't play slot corner in college. You're going to let him learn a new position in the pros?
That's the Bucks way, Sean. I'm trying to fit in with this franchise.
Yeah, well, we'll make him a punter. I understand what you're saying. Well, what I'm saying is that's the guy that scares me because he doesn't have a position. This is the Derrick Brooks conversation when we had, he was compared to Derrick Brooks. And if you remember, when Derrick Brooks was drafted, a lot of teams were asking him to play safety.
That's right.
If you remember. And
that's
he
right.
said, no, I'm a linebacker, right? And then he turns out to be a Hall of Fame linebacker. He's an amazing individual, obviously. And it worked out for him. As in the Tampa 2, we needed a fast, light linebacker. I like the guy, but he's a tweener. It scares me.
Okay.
All right.
So I understand why you like him, right? Because he can rush the passer as well. I mean, this is a guy that can play linebacker and rush the passer because he's of his speed. The guy's all over the field. He's got a high IQ. He's going to go in the top 10. I just want a guy that already has a position coming out of college. I just want him to have a position and start him from day one at that position. Mark Barron, we tried to play him at safety, and he didn't have the speed at safety, which everyone knew when we drafted him, that he didn't have the speed.
Right.
And then he was moved to linebacker, and he had a very, very successful career at linebacker.
All right, Sean. So one thing first I wanted to mention, you mentioned Gil Brandt. Of course, Ira knows Gil Brandt. They both enlisted in the Korean War together years ago. on the same day, so that was a big thing. All right, Sean, the Bucks have two picks in the fourth round. Two picks. Walk us through what you like in the fourth round.
As long as the draft plays out. So if we get Henry in the first round, we get Clyde in the second round, we get Ezra or Isaiah in the third round, I'm going defensive tackle because I know that that's a position that we need depth on because we lost Bo Allen in the offseason. We don't have anybody to really fill that position. I like Devon Hamilton out of Ohio State as one of our first fourth-round draft picks. If you don't know who Devon Hamilton is, he had an amazing Senior Bowl, so I like watching him because he was unstoppable in the Senior Bowl. He played terrific at Ohio State, but the problem at Ohio State, there's so many great players, you get lost sometimes when you're a good player, especially a guy that is your run stopper. So this guy has a bull rush. He was unstoppable at the Senior Bowl. He had the highest grade of any defensive tackle on the one-on-ones during the Senior Bowl, which means there was not another tackle that had scores as high as this gentleman from all the coaches at the Senior Bowl. He was one of the highest graded run defenders in the country in college football last year by PFF, right? So I know you don't like Pro Football Focus, but this is a guy that could come in right away if Sue or Vea go to the bench, could come in right away and take those reps and stop the run. Now, as far as the pass rush, he has one move. He's a bull rusher. He's extremely strong. He had a 75% pass rushing grade in 19, according to PPF, right? So, obviously, it's not Derrick Brown, but this is a gentleman that can come in from day one and be a guy that comes off the bench that helps you. He's immediately going to stop the run. So, he's in that Vea Sue mold. He was a five-star recruit going into Ohio State. He has the pedigree. Big upgrade over Bo Allen.
Yeah, if he was a better pass rusher, he'd be a higher pick. So, that's sort of his... His downside for now, and that's fine. So, Sean, we jump down now to the end of the fourth round, which is the rare Buccaneers compensatory pick, 139 overall. What do you like there? What should we keep our eye on?
Raquan Davis from Alabama. Love this guy. So he's a senior. He stayed. So he had a better junior year than a senior year, and that happens sometimes, as you know. They have a great junior year, but then sometimes these guys stay their senior year thinking they were going to build on that. And it was a little bit of a letdown because he had so many players on that Alabama team. He's 6'6", 311. He had 33 7/8 hands, which, as you know, defensive tackles need those big hands, right? So, you know, to grab onto the offensive lineman and move them. So this is another five-star recruit out of Alabama. He's a senior. He played three seasons at Alabama, started three seasons. I just think this guy has a ton of potential, and he fills that Bo Allen. I think that what we're going to have a problem with is linebacker depth and defensive tackle depth after we draft a tackle. Because I think we got some depth with Haig, and I think that was one of why we signed Haig, was to get some depth.
Right.
And I think that defensive tackle position and that linebacker position, we're going to need some help. And I think that you add like a Devon Hamilton and a Raquan Davis. They're both over 6'6". They're both over 320 pounds. These guys are going to be tough to move. And I think with that extra fourth round pick, as long as you get Henry Ruggs in the first round, then I think you go twice. I think you address the offensive line and defensive line position.
Ira, I got to ask you, all right? Now, Sean has walked us through the first four rounds, and that's where we're going to stop as far as the draft today with our plan and our vision for those first four rounds. But I got to ask you, Ira, are we going to have to go out and buy you Depends if Henry Ruggs is the pick in round one? Is it going to – how much will it shock you?
Well, it's not going to shock me because, Sean, if we were to put a headline – on today's podcast with you, there's an obvious headline, and here it is. Brady changes everything. That's the headline. And you know what? That's not a crazy thought by Sean Sullivan. Brady changes everything. You know, you can't be worried about a guy who's going to be a heck of a player in 2023 when you're all in. So it's hard to argue that somebody's going to make a more of an impact than Ruggs, unless you like one of the other receivers. You know, you might be a Judy guy or whatever. But in terms of the position, wide receiver, even though you got the best tandem, and I think Sean agrees, it's the best tandem in football, you're adding a big-time playmaker.
Well, Ira, it's not just the wide receiver position. It's the special teams position, a punt returner and a kick returner. No more guys that I've never heard of. Returning kicks, okay? Let's get a guy out there with 4 feet speed that can change the field position for the Buccaneers. We never have that. We've never had an Eric Metcalf guy. You know, I love Eric Metcalf. I mean, the guy was exciting every time he caught the ball. You know, Deion Sanders type, you know, where Deion got the ball and he returned. Henry Ruggs is that type of talent. We're talking about a guy that can change the game every time he touches the ball. 25 touchdowns on 98 touches in his college career. That's incredible percentage. 3.6 times. Every time he touches the ball, 3.6 times. The fourth time he touches it is a touchdown.
You know, that's like Sean Sullivan's average, Steve, with every third or fourth customer that comes in walks out with a vehicle. That's not too bad.
When I think of Ruggs and that hypothetical of him coming to the team, Ira, and I look at Ruggs, I think of Joey Galloway going to the Seahawks out of college, and he was just an absolute terror on returns. And he obviously phased out of that like most guys do quickly in his career. But I think that could be a great parallel for the Bucs if they did bring in a guy like that.
You know, yeah, I was also thinking about Joey Galloway, Sean. That's a name that came to my mind. And you know what? When you look back, he had a heck of a career.
He did. So you're going to have Mike Evans on the outside. You're still, and you know Arians wants Godwin to stay in the slot. He'll probably catch 100 balls from Tom Brady in the slot. So I think Godwin's going to catch a lot of those balls. So what are you going to do on the outside? You're going to have Scotty Miller running on the outside? I just don't see it. You put Henry Ruggs on the outside of that, he's going to play against the third best corner on the other team, and then he's just going to murder that guy.
And Sean, I've been saying, tell me if I'm wrong, but everybody's been jumping on O.J. Howard. Oh, he's going to blossom. He's finally got somebody like Brady. I say rubbish, Sean. I say the guy that's going to benefit is Mr. Brady, because Brady's going to develop a rapport with him because he never drops a ball.
Yeah, I definitely think that Brady's going to be in my fantasy football league, one of the top picks. I especially if O.J. gets traded, which let's just hope, guys, that we're not trading up three or four spots in the first round and giving up O.J. Howard in the pick 14 to go to 9. It would drive me crazy if we did that. If we gave away O.J. Howard to move up four or five spots to draft a tackle in the first round.
I think it's very likely, but not in the first round. I just don't think there's going to be that kind of market for O.J., and I'm just not seeing it. But I could see them using it to, you know, in the later rounds and that being a factor there. One overarching thing that I think is fascinating, guys, and we can – you know, the draft is all about speculation and hope and what's what makes it fun. And we can head out on this note. But everybody seems to forget sometimes that the Bucs somehow were third in the league in scoring last year, number one in passing, number four in pass attempts, number three in yards. I mean, they put up incredible numbers. There's only so much that Tom Brady can do, except we know that he's not going to turn the ball over. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's so much about what this signing is.
You hit the nail on the head. I read an article last night, Steve, that was talking about the Bucs defense and how the last six games of the year, it was the number one rated defense in the NFL, the last six games. And I was looking at that and trying to break it down how they got to that percentage. One of the most interesting things that I read was the average field position for the Buccaneers defense taking over was 32nd in the NFL.
Wow. Yeah.
Which means that those turnovers, those 30 interceptions plus the additional O.J. Howard turnovers, and I can say that because he had three really bad turnovers in the season, changed the game's field position to the point where the Bucs defense was ranked 32nd in field position. And I was like, wow, that just puts us in such a hard place. So take out 30 turnovers and go to 8 turnovers. And how many more wins is that going to? So Brady's not going to throw for 5,000 yards. And if he does, I'm super happy. It'd be like Brett Favre when he played with Minnesota and had his second best season in his career. I only need him to throw for 4,000 yards. Throw for 30 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, and we're going to be a Super Bowl contender.
Sean, the one thing that Brady's proven over 20 years, above all, the guy's the master at ball security. Nobody's better. Nobody's better, Sean. Nobody's better.
Yeah, I even like to boil it down simpler, Ira, Sean. Jameis turned the ball over twice a game. If Brady just turns it over once a game, in the NFL, that's the difference. And that's why I personally would like to see them add to the defense and make sure they get a good running back. I think we'll be fine. But, it's what makes the draft fun. Sean, we have, as always, so much enjoyed your insight and your research. And we could go on endlessly, but, that's not the podcast world. We can't talk for 3 hours. But we're going to have you on immediately after the draft. I want to try to set something up where maybe we can do something quickly after day one to reassess, maybe Friday morning or maybe Friday or maybe Saturday morning, we reassess going into the final round. But either way, we look forward to it. And we, as always, encourage everyone to go to Bill Curry Ford. Ira's a customer. I'm a customer. Lee's a customer. We know we feel great about telling everybody to be a customer because they leave happy. And the few times that they don't, you do everything you can to make sure that it gets right. And that's all that anyone can ask for.
Steve, I want to thank you guys very much. I'm always humbled when you guys have me on the podcast. I'm just a big Bucs fan, and I appreciate you guys listening to me and paying attention. For a fan, it means a lot. And I know that there's tons of fans out there that would love the same opportunity, and I'm just very humbled by it and very thankful for the opportunity. Steve and Ira, thank you.
I don't think it's a stretch to think that within about 3 or 4 months, Henry Ruggs is pulling out of Bill Curry Ford with a new vehicle.
I would be at the airport picking him up, Ira.